Hello and welcome to the Fave English podcast, your one-stop shop for Venezuelan football in English, bringing you fortnightly episodes dedicated to the Venezuelan league, the national teams, and the myriad of Venezuelan players around the world. Welcome to another episode of the Fave English podcast. Last week, or 2 weeks rather, Dominic, myself, and Kevin hosted our first live recording of the podcast on Twitter Spaces. Unfortunately, Twitter did not select our space to be recorded, so that has been lost into the ether for all of eternity. But never mind. We are here today with Chris Smith. Chris Smith is a freelance journalist based in England, but with a speciality in MLS and particularly Atlanta United, which, of course, to our regulars and Venezuelan football fans around the world, will be familiar with, down to MLS legend Josef Martinez and fellow Venezuelan players at the club, Ronald Hernandez and Darwin Mateus. Dominic, I know you've been excited to record this podcast for a while. So firstly, hello to you and how are you doing?
I'm doing great. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to digging into this topic with Chris.
And Chris, our guest for today, joining us from England. How are you today, Chris?
Yeah, I'm great. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm really looking forward to essentially sitting back and just listening to two people that know what they're talking about. I probably won't be talking much today. But to kick things off, considering where we are with the MLS season at the moment, maybe Dominic, let's start with just a summary of Atlanta United's season and let's go from there.
Sure. So they did end up making the playoffs after a bit of an up and down season. I'm sure Chris can go into more detail about that. Ended up with a new manager or a new head coach, rather. Joseph came back relatively strong from his injury this season, relevant to our podcast, and got 12 goals. They did get knocked out of the playoffs in the first round by NYCFC in a not so close match. I believe it was 2-0 was the final score. I've seen, and Chris can go into this far more than me, I'm sure, but I've seen a lot of mixed reactions to the season. I've seen a lot of positives about the future of the coaching situation. I've seen quite a few people who were not, who felt perhaps that, you know, they could have gone much further than they did in the playoffs. And that perhaps there were a lot of mistakes made earlier in the season that shouldn't have happened in the first place. But yeah, it seems like it's been kind of a back and forth season for Atlanta.
Yeah, I think I would agree. It's quite mixed. Obviously, to even make the playoffs, given the start they made under Gabriel Inter, was, I think it was something of a miracle. He'd won 2 out of 13 games by the time he departed, and the squad seemed to be at war with each other. There's just so much bad blood around the club that it felt like a bit of an unsalvageable situation. But between Rob Valentino and Gonzalo Pineda, they seemed to really galvanise everybody and sort of get everyone singing from the same hymn sheet and really pulling in the same direction. So credit to them for getting there. It was disappointing to see how they crashed out. They really didn't turn up against NYCFC, and people can point to the challenging pitch at Yankee Stadium. You know, I think it's the most narrow pitch you're ever going to see. I don't think 7-year-olds are playing a pitch that small, let alone professionals. So, and they never cope with it. And then they just collapsed in the second half. So yeah, it was disappointing, but I think everyone's got to take a big step back and realize, you know, Joseph himself has been coming off a tough injury and was never going to be the 25-30 goal striker that, you know, we've seen from him in the past. It's going to be a process in getting him back. And Ezequiel Barco missed time because of the Olympics. You know, there was injuries, the disruption with coaching, there was CONCACAF Champions League. There's so many different factors and so many different balls in the air that to be a playoff team, and especially after the disaster that was 2020, I think, although the reaction now is mixed, I think give it a month or so, I think people look back and be quite positive about it.
Just to continue on that point you brought up, you know, of course, the really rough start to the season, the coach switch. Before Heinze was let go, there was a moment where, you know, at least this was said in reports anyways, that, you know, there were some quotes coming out from Joseph, but also from other individuals around the team, that were alluding to, like, this might be the end of the story for him and the team. You know, there were some interesting dark moments about mid-season. Now that obviously things have been repaired socially quite a bit around the team. And of course, Joseph ended up having a relatively good season considering the injury context. How do you see, what do you feel his near future is with this team in terms of, you know, do you think that all those connections have been reforged? Do you see him continuing to more or less maintain his current role in this team? What do you think 2022 looks like for Atlanta United and Joseph's relationship?
I think it takes a step back to normality and what it was pre-ACL injury, personally. Let's get it straight. Right off the bat, he's an absolute legend in that city already. And, it's, I know that word gets tossed around quite a lot. Jordan called me a legend today in over WhatsApp. So, it definitely gets overused. But, he's an icon. He's a legend in that city. You know, it's not often in the United States you get murals of soccer players up on the walls and things like that. And Joseph's got that in the city. He's got a clear love for Atlanta. He's always turned up to Braves games and things like that. And yeah, I don't think he ever wanted to leave. I don't think that's ever really crossed his mind. You know, there's a period where he was recovering from his injury where he considered retiring, in his own words. He felt like giving up and things were getting tough. And then obviously it came out that he had some complications with COVID-19, with some heart trouble. But in terms of Atlanta United and Joseph Martinez, I think Gabriel Ainge, I don't want to speculate too much, based on what we know, which we'll never know everything, but it seemed like he was very much sort of it was like gasoline on a fire where, things were fine. Gabriel comes in, things get heated, and Joseph's a leader in that team, and he's going to be one of the first ones sort of to stand up for everybody else and maybe front up in front of the media. So a lot got taken from that, but I think in 2022, when he's a bit fitter, hopefully that injury is further behind him and he's healthy. I think as long as he's on the pitch scoring goals, the fans are always going to love him. The fans are always going to back him, perhaps over anybody else at the club, and perhaps more than the club itself, they'll back Joseph. So I don't see a problem in any sort of air quotes rebuilding a relationship. I think that's already been done.
A little transition, but something that I wanted to certainly talk about here, and it's still about Joseph, is the general impact he's had on MLS, the general impact he's had on the reputation of Venezuelans in MLS, in a way that seems just so special and so unique, not just for other Venezuelan footballers, but just for any nationality, just in a league, to sort of have their reputation so boosted by one player. Can you speak to, after he arrived in 2017, and even more so after 2018, when he broke the goal scoring record, you saw so many teams, not just Atlanta, who of course have had other Venezuelan players, but since then, but Houston, Vancouver, Columbus, all different teams going in on attacking Venezuelan talent, often from Liga Footve, but also, someone like Cadiz, who was in France and Portugal. Can you speak to, from what you've seen and heard through your reporting, what the actual impact Joseph has had on the scouting, the coaching, the eyes of MLS? Because from my perspective, it seems like he's had this huge impact on how they are looking at players, but I'm also quite outside of the bubble. So from your perspective, Do you see Joseph Martinez actively changing the way scouts and coaches are looking at Venezuelan players?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not just about scouts and coaches as well. Even fans, like over here in the UK, and I'm sure Jordan can speak to this as well, but people tend to know who Joseph Martinez is a lot more than you'd expect. If that's your, I don't know if you agree with that, Jordan, but that's the perception I get.
Yeah, you get English journalists that write about him when, particularly, when it's the summer over in England, the big transfer season, when you get those kind of articles that analyze, who are the next players that could make the jump from MLS to Europe or MLS to England, without like sort of knowing that perhaps he's already been here. Obviously, he's in Switzerland with two clubs.
Yeah.
Torino, of course, without the success he's had in MLS, but his name always gets brung up. And I think it's his talent, and particularly with Miguel Morón coming to Newcastle and doing so well. And that's another sort of narrative, like, you know, could there be a reunion of the two at Newcastle? I think probably with the injury and the time lost, but also the reputation he has in Atlanta and that connection that he obviously has in the city. He said it himself that he plans on retiring there. And, you know, you players do say that. And more often than not, it doesn't happen. Not because they're lying, but just careers change. But it would not surprise me to see Josef Martínez bow out at Atlanta. And if you look at the trust that Atlanta have placed in Venezuelan talent off of the back of Martínez, you know, it's led to them taking Ronald Hernández. And obviously he had that spell at Aberdeen that was also, you know, linked or blamed not being the right word, but a useful word for him even going to Aberdeen. Like, it was a precursor to him ultimately going to Atlanta, perhaps. And then Darwin Mateus coming straight out of Zamora FC, straight from Liga Footbay without going elsewhere first, which is different to Ronald and different to Josef, who had proven themselves, if you like, on bigger stages, other stages. Ronald Hernández had done well with Venezuela's under-20s at the World Cup, for example. He'd then gone to Norway. He'd had a tumultuous time in Scotland. Josef Martínez had been in Switzerland. He'd been in Italy. For Darwin to go straight to an MLS club, obviously he's been playing for Atlanta United 2s this season and doing very well. For him to go straight from Liga Footbay to an MLS club on a multi-year deal is, you know, would that have happened without Jose? Almost certainly not. So the status of him, not just in the city and amongst fans, but obviously the belief that it's given the club and MLS in general, Venezuelan talent, has been huge. Like, if you look at the number of players that have played, Venezuelan players that have played in MLS from, you know, year one of MLS up until Josef's arrival is the same as the amount of Venezuelans that joined MLS in the 18 months after. Like, it was a massive touch point.
Yeah. That's it, as well as the sort of reputation that he has and the sort of perception. There's, as well, we all know that nowadays MLS is a big breeding ground for South Americans, and Atlanta United were a big part of that, and I'd put LAFC in there as well. But with Atlanta United, you really, when you think about it, you associate it with Argentine players. Obviously, Ezequiel Barco's there. They've had Pity Martinez. Marcelino Moreno's there now. Leandro González Pérez. I could probably talk all day about Argentines at Atlanta United. But with Josef being the most successful of them, that's a really big advert for Venezuelan football. It really shows, you know, the talent is there. I mean, you mentioned Jonba Cadiz before, but I mean, he scored a goal in a playoff game for Nashville the other day. There's Soteldo at Toronto, who, you know, they had a tough season, but as the season wore on, he got better, and he's just come straight in from Brazilian football and doing well in the Libertadores. So, you know, that again, that the pipeline is there. Josef, I don't think you can put it ultimately down to one player, but I think if you're going to pick one player out who's sort of forged that trust, then it's got to be him, because it's not just the goal scoring record that he picked up in 2018, but he had that run of consecutive games where I can't remember any games it was and how close he got to the actual record, but it was only an injury that stopped him. And you know, he was chasing a record set by Lionel Messi there, and even the British press were covering that quite extensively. I do remember that. So, yeah, I think, again, not to put it down to one player, but if you have to pick one, I think who else but Josef?
Sure. And, you know, I think one thing that stood out to me, maybe as part of the root of the thought behind that question, and Jordan kind of noted with the Darwin Mateus move, you know, would that have happened without Josef's history? I think what stood out to me was, you know, you mentioned some players, some other forwards that are doing relatively well, Soteldo and Cadiz, and not necessarily, you know, Toronto obviously had a tough season, but overall they're doing most of the time what they're, you know, there to do. I think what stood out to me was that before those two arrived, there were several Venezuelan forwards that arrived in MLS that tanked, that did quite poorly. I'm thinking of Ronaldo Peña, Anthony Blondel, players that arrived and were deemed to have completely, you know, to be perfectly frank, failed at getting into their 11s or competing or scoring in their cases. And so when you see, what stood out to me was that you would see players like that come and do poorly, but it didn't seem to deter the interest from clubs. And I think that's what really stood out in a potential impact for Joseph for me is, I think often people would be worried that if a player of a less known nationality in football would arrive at a country and do poorly, it would permanently taint that nationality's reputation. And it just seemed like that wasn't happening in MLS, even though there were actually quite a few players that, you know, that could have caused that problem. And so for me, it definitely stood out that he was sort of shining above all the rest in that sense. But maybe we should step away from Joseph for a second, only because there are multiple other Venezuelans at Atlanta United that we could talk about. I guess we'll start just with, because he, you know, was in the first team, maybe we'll talk about Ronald Hernandez. Jordan brought him up a little bit there, and his time at Aberdeen as well. You know, there were a lot of question marks or confusion around the last couple of years of his career and even his move to Atlanta. But, you know, obviously he's had the season there now. He had some bursts where he was playing quite a bit and some times where he was playing less. But what do you think the takeaways are with the season over in terms of his near future at that team? What role you think he could play in 2022? Do you see him as being someone that can become a more consistent starter for Atlanta?
It's a bit tough. I mean, I've just brought up his minutes, because obviously he's been a bit part player, but he only played 636 minutes according to Who Scored, which obviously it's tough because Brooks Lennon, he's a really strong player. You know, Atlanta lost Julian Gressel, and there was a big pipeline. I'm going to bring him up again, but a big pipeline to Joseph was taken away there. And that partnership with Gressel's crosses and then Joseph just being Joseph in the box, it was a big part of how Atlanta United played. So I think it was important that they found someone who could sort of plug and play in that position, and Brooks Lennon has got that delivery. And I think where Ronald Hernandez might find his way back into the team is if Gonzalo Pineda decides to go out and out with a back four again. He's basically stuck more to a three centre-back system since he's been in, but towards the end of the season, he switched in-game to a 4-2-3-1 or 4-3-3 with quite a lot of success, changed a few games for him. I personally see Hernandez better in that position than Brooks Lennon. Partly because of his defensive side of the game, I think it's a lot better than Brooks Lennon's. I mean, Lennon used to be a winger for a start off. That's why he plays wing back, and that's why he's so important going forward. So I think if that's a permanent switch for Pineda, then I think he could get some joy. But I think if he sticks with like a 3-4-3 or 3-4-2-1, I think he's going to struggle for consistent minutes just because Lennon is so good going forward.
And the other very exciting Venezuelan presence at Atlanta right now is Darren Mathias, who you know, signed with the team and played in the USL Championship this season and did quite well. Atlanta United too did not, you know, make the playoffs or anything like that, but overall he had a lot of positive statistics coming out of his season there. What do you think the pathway is for Darwin? Do you see this as a person who could be in the first team in the near future? Do you think he's probably going to be sticking around in USL for a little bit? Or do you think the next year or two are looking like for him?
From what I'm told, the plan is at some point in the next 18 months, they definitely want him playing with the senior team. It took him a little bit of time to get used to playing in USL. I don't think he quite matched it physically at first, but you know, and you got to remember, this is a kid who's been moved away from his home really young age. You know, he's got a lot of things to get used to, different culture and everything like that. But once he adjusted, he really did start producing some serious form. He scored a few goals, he's got a couple of assists, and his highlights reel is quite impressive, to be honest. He scored some really good goals as well, really showing off his talent and his technique. So I know that he's been, prior to the playoffs starting, most of Atlanta United 2's players were sent on vacation, let go, and sort of see you again next season. But Darwin was kept around to train with the first team. From what I'm told, it's basically to try and get him ready to be a part of that first team. Maybe if not straight away next season, then as it wears on, again, he can transition. And I think he's earned it. You know, I've not watched a great deal of full Atlanta United 2 games, but I've brought up a lot of clips, and Darwin Mateus always seems to be one that sticks out and impresses.
Absolutely. And yeah, you know, he did seem to physically be a little out of his element at first, but then he went on a couple runs where a couple of games he was getting a goal or assist back to back. And in the end seemed to be a pretty strong outlet for a side that didn't necessarily have a great year, but certainly had some talent. Jordan, do you want to hop in here? I've cycled through Atlanta's Venezuelan players. I don't know. Do you want to run any questions quick past Chris before we move on?
Yeah, I was thinking with Darwin, almost in a comparable situation, just based on age and position, area of the field, to obviously Wiki Carmona at New York Red Bulls, who's had, you know, a great season, given that he came to New York Red Bulls at the age of 17, turned 18 in March, hadn't kicked a ball professionally in Venezuela, was scouted at the under-17s South American Championships by New York Red Bulls, the same pathway that, you know, Christian Cáceres took. Mm-hmm. And we've seen not just young Venezuelans, but we've seen young players in MLS, players that at 18, 19 years old, take center stage and do so well. Obviously, at the moment, MLS is being growing in reputation for its own talent. And when I say own talent, obviously US youth national team players going into the senior team and making that jump to Europe at an incredibly young age. And obviously this season, the hype has been Ricardo Pepi at FC Dallas, but we've had Weston McKennie in previous years do really well. And we're seeing now that young Venezuelans are getting an opportunity in MLS straight off the bat, whereas, say, you know, Martinez had proved himself of caliber by being in Europe first. And I was just wondering where, you know, what's the likelihood positionally for Darwin Mateus to have a breakthrough season next year, Chris? Like, who is he competing with for a place in the first team? And you know, those players that he's competing with, you know, are they players like Martinez that you just simply aren't just going to get dropped? Like, what does the pathway look like for Darwin into the first team? Is it open? Is it dropped?
It's going to be interesting because, I mean, it depends what system they're going to play, because if they go back to three centre-backs, the only spots I would say that, because I don't think he's suited to playing as a wing-back, and I think you'll both agree with me there. Yeah. But there's two spots underneath the striker there. Marcelino Moreno is going to take one of them, rightly so, because I think he was Atlanta United's best player last season, but Ezequiel Barco may be leaving because obviously he had a great second half of the season. Atlanta United have wanted to move him on for a long time. That's been the whole point of him coming there, was to come in and succeed and then leave. And it's took him a bit longer than previously hoped. Thiago Almada looks like he's going to be coming in there. So perhaps as the season wears on, you know, Darwin Mateus could be brought in as a supplemental piece, without actually hitting the salary cap too much as well, because he's not going to be on the kind of money that sort of you'd expect from an attacking player in MLS. He might be a useful piece as backup to one of those, or as a rotational piece, because we know how hectic MLS gets at the best of times, let alone when it's in a World Cup year as well. Mm-hmm. If he plays in a 4-3-3, then it's one of those wing spots. Jürgen Damm is obviously a sort of, well, he's the most expensive backup player in the league. You know, he's got $1 million salary and played about 15 games last season, barely started. So, you know, there's spots there sort of as a backup on the wing. And I think that's an area where Atlanta United have been desperately short, is they can field one of the best attacking lines in the league. And to be honest, the starting 11, when it's all clicking, is among the best in the league. But if something's not quite working on the day and you need to change things up, maybe, you know, drop a stick of dynamite into the game to make an analogy, then they're very short on options apart from Jürgen Damm's outright pace. The only other real option that was being brought on was Jake Mulroney, who he can cross a ball quite well, seems to get into some good positions, but he lacks a lot of the quality that you can see around the league. So there are spots there. It just depends whether Gonzalo Pineda and Rob Valentino see enough in him right now to think he can mix it at that senior level. But, you know, a lot of people are going to point to his physical side and how small he is. But, I mean, the greatest player ever to play the game, who is still playing the game right now, never had physical size on his side, did he? And he never had a problem. So I think that's a bit of a trope myself. That won't hold him back.
Yeah, and his quality on the ball was, you know, evident from a very young age. Like with Zamora last season in 2020, you know, he was probably, it's probably not an exaggeration to say he was their best player. And you know, he was, you know, a year younger than he is now, kind of thing, and playing against Venezuelans as opposed to, you know, the international caliber of player that MLS have, and also, you know, the old stereotype of big bruising defenders, big athletes that MLS is packed full of, particularly in defensive positions. To keep it Venezuelan, but to move, still connected to Atlanta, but move ever so slightly away from the players and to yourself. It's, of course, intriguing to us to see, well, in my case, a fellow English journalist with a focus on Venezuelan football, albeit through MLS. And just wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, how that has played a role in your career, because observing on your Twitter, you know, I've followed you for a couple of years now, two really sort of big moments in, I guess, your development has been breaking the story of Darwin Mateus' signing, and similarly, a really good interview you did with Josef Martinez's youth coach from Valencia in Venezuela. How, you know, firstly, what sort of, let's go chronologically, the article with Josef was first. What inspired you to sort of dig deeper into Josef? Because it's easy to write an article about, you know, the records that he's broken or the goals that he scores. But, you know, you reached out and you wanted to interview, you know, someone from the very beginning, someone in Venezuela. And for an English journalist to reach out and do that, you know, you saw how well you were received and how willing people were to talk.
Yeah, I mean, you've just said it there. Everybody talks about Josef's records and, you know, the goals he scores and the trophies that he wins. But where did this guy come from? You know, players, all the big players in Europe all have a backstory that tend to get told quite well. We all know about where Lionel Messi came from. And, you know, we all, even to an extent, we all know where Weston McKennie came from, you know, through the Dallas Academy. And so we've seen stuff about his backstory. But Josef Martinez is this massive icon. For a team that's completely changed the face of MLS, yet where was he before that? How did he become so good? Where did he sort of develop his talent? So that was the thinking behind the story. There's something there that the Atlanta United fans were going to connect with really deeply, and it turns out that they did. You know, the response I got, as you say, on that was remarkable. The fans loved it. It was a big turning point for my career for sure. And sort of alerted a lot of people to my presence when I'd kind of been banging on the door to no success before that. Some of the quotes got picked up by the MLS site as well, which clearly showed, like, you know, Simon gave me some really great insight. And as you say, the response to me asking the questions and just wanting to sort of shed a bit of light on that development path in Venezuela and how different it is to, say, the United States or, you know, to how players come through in England, where we're from, obviously. I think he was keen to give me the story that I was to let people know. So it all just worked brilliantly.
Yeah, and you know, you touched upon his name there, but so people know, and you know, the guy gets the credit he deserves. One of Josef's coaches during his youth development was, as you say, Simon Lozano of the Achilles Nzoa Futsal School. And you know, that's a really interesting point. It wasn't a football, you know, school per se, it was a futsal school. And similarly, another Venezuelan international on the women's side, Dani Usco Rodriguez, was also there at similar times to Josef. They overlapped a little bit. For people that haven't read the article and, you know, perhaps may not have the time to read the article off the back of this, although we'll look to include the link, what did you learn from Simon about Josef's, like, youth development and maybe perhaps wider youth development in Venezuelan football in general?
I mean, sticking on Josef first, because there's a whole lot that I learned about Venezuela in general just from speaking to him. But just speaking to Josef Martinez, Simon described his talent to me as God-given. I'm not a religious man myself, but it really stood out to me that a 7-year-old kid could come and be leaps and bounds ahead of the players his age and players older than him that have been playing for a couple of years. He credited a lot of his sort of, because he's got a unique playing style, Joseph, as well, like the way that he holds up the ball, the way he strikes a ball, the way he dribbles is very unique. You don't see, he looks a bit like a freestyler. And Simon quite rightly credited a lot of that to futsal, you know, the different sort of movements and the different sort of kind of explosion that you get out of playing that game compared to just your normal run-of-the-mill football is completely different. So, you know, a lot of Joseph's success has been brought by that unique style. Defenders don't know how to deal with him. So doing that from 7 years old has obviously paid off. But in terms of Venezuela in general, my perception from speaking to Simon and reading your book as well, is it's remarkable to me that there are now so many talented Venezuelans, I mean, in MLS for a start off, because some of the conditions that they're having to come through are so challenging. Simon sent me some pictures of the footballs that they're using. You know, there's all running repairs and stitches on there. And like, it's just crazy to think that I can go down to my local shop and just get a ball in 10 seconds, job done, it's finished. And there we go, I can go for a kickabout. Whereas if they lose a ball, it's like it's losing part of their sort of anatomy. So, you know, the conditions they have to go through are so challenging. But at the same time, you know, that speaks to a lot of South America. And, you know, there's a reason why these players are so determined and so sort of robust compared to some of the European counterparts, I think, is because they've had that from a young age and they know the value of what they're doing.
Yeah, and I think it's a really good point that you make, and the use of the word robust is a good one. Because I was struggling to phrase it just yesterday. I was talking to a head coach of a team in Scandinavia, and he made a really interesting observation to me that it touches upon exactly what you said. But it was interesting to hear from a head coach, and what he said is, you know, he was equally, if not more, interested in you know, perhaps assessing a young Venezuelan player talking 18, 19 years old, that's come through like a good academy and perhaps has had some involvement with the national team at youth level, over a similar age kid or a kid a couple of years older that had spent his whole youth development in a Premier League or Cat 1 academy in England. And that, you know, to hear that is phenomenal, because you think the amount of players that drop out of Premier League academies and go on to have, you know, decent careers at Championship or League One level is vast. But then on the flip side, so many never recover, tumble all the way down the football ladder and never hear from them again. And he didn't develop his point too much, but what was sort of unsaid, what he alluded to when he mentioned the Venezuelans more so than the players in English Premier League academies, is that robust nature. You know, I think there's some value in that. Like, you get players that spend their whole youth development in Premier League academies or high quality academies in England, not just England, Europe in general, where, you know, they're in the club branded tracksuit from the age of 7 to 17. Everything's provided for them round the clock. They're given everything they need to succeed. And then if they're dropped from a Premier League academy at the age of 18, it's a massive, massive psychological change from being essentially parented by a club with, you know, 40 odd staff at every category to look after you, to being an 18-year-old Venezuelan where you're always fighting up and you're not, I don't want to say you're not cared for in the same way, because there's lots of Venezuelan clubs doing lots of good things and caring for their players at youth level. But the situation is completely, you know, incomparable, like you said, with some of the facilities that these young players have come through. And that's, you know, it says something when a head coach for a European club is more interested in South American players that have always had to struggle. I don't want to risk sounding as if, like, you know, it's being fetishized at all, but it does develop a very strong mindset. And perhaps that is why so many Venezuelans, not just football players as well, are able to move all over the world and succeed from a young age, because they've got that grit and determination that perhaps other people don't have in the same abundance. We have 2 minutes left of this podcast, and I really want to touch upon your you're essentially your transfer exclusive when Darwin moved Atlanta. Tell us a little bit about that, and you know, don't need to worry about sounding arrogant. What did that do for you and your amongst Atlanta football fans?
Yeah, you know, not just Atlanta, but in general. Because I mean, you know, we're in 2021 now, and I only just started becoming a writer in 2018, and I'm 30 at the end of this year, so I was quite late into the industry. So, and I'd always had an interest in transfers and wanted to get into it, because I think now that I've done that and a few more since then, and I'm reporting the Ricardo Pepi situation at the moment, I find that the most exciting part of the job. You know, because the situation is constantly changing, and there's always new fresh updates, and you're constantly trying to chase the big stories. So that one, it was my first real transfer story, and it gave me a real insight into that world and really orientated my career more towards that. I think it did gain me a larger amount of respect in the Atlanta United community, because until then, sure, you know, I had the interview with Simon and a couple of bits here and there, but mostly what I was doing was opinion-based. And we all know, you know, Twitter isn't the real world, but for some reason, that big blue tick on Twitter and that X amount of thousands and tens of thousands or millions of followers seems to really impact on how much people respect you and respect your opinion. So it gave me something solid that, you know, this is my news, this is what's happening. It went through to fruition just as I'd reported. So I think it was a bit of validation for me as well. And I mean, now just seeing Darwin doing well in USL, I keep a track on him. I would keep a track on him if I reported him joining a different club, because, you know, you take an interest in these players, because I always say part of journalism when you report on transfers is you stop having to make it about yourself as well. Because ultimately your job, if you're speaking to an agent especially, they kind of put their trust in you, sort of giving the best story and sort of trying to generate the best interest. So, you know, you are really reporting on people's careers at that point. But yeah, the Darwin Mateus transfer, as I say, it was my first transfer story that I'd ever broken and reported. And some can say it's not the biggest one in the world, but it was the biggest one to me, because it gained me so much respect and it gave me such a big interest in reporting on transfers.
Mm-hmm. And I off the back of your answer, want to ask one more question, aware that the podcast is coming to an end. But when you're talking with agents, and you know, I speak to many agents, not just as previously as journalists, but now, like, you know, working with players, I speak to players' agents and, you know, representatives, and there's different names and different roles that people have in supporting players. But how do you approach your relationship with agents when it comes to, not, you spoke about them putting trust in you, but also you trusting them? Because, you know, some agents will, and I say this without judgment, because at the end of the day, football is a game on and off the pitch. But, you know, some agents will feed news stories to journalists that they trust or have a relationship with, that isn't always, you know, accurate in the sense that transfer is going to happen. It has, you know, there's other reasons why you as a journalist or an agent as a player's representative would like a story out there about transfer news. How do you manage that? Because obviously it's very, you talked about the excitement of it, of breaking a story being constantly evolving. But that, as a journalist, that can leave you quite vulnerable. Because if you report, you know, a move that is going to happen then doesn't happen, or you report a bit of information, people on Twitter can be very short-sighted and can have very short memories and sometimes forget this. Things evolve, and you know, often right up until the last minute, there's three or four clubs that are going to sign a player, and it's not always the favorite or not always the club that's being reported on that actually pulls it off. So how do you manage that relationship with agents, and you know, not just them trusting in you, but you trusting in them?
Yeah, I mean, you very much have to take it on a case by case basis, where you get to know these people as much as you can via like WhatsApp and sort of doing video calls and stuff like that. You very quickly, you do get a sense of what this person's all about, even like sort of judging how their clients behave and what clients they've got and, you know, who they're willing to deal with. So there's not a one size fits all way to deal with different agents. You're always going to reach out the same way. You know, you introduce yourself, say where you're from, say what you can do for them. And then from there, it's just up to them whether they want to, you know, whether you're their guy, basically. I mean, there's a transfer. There's a few transfers that I'm sort of trying to get to work on at the moment. And again, it's just about sort of putting your best foot forward. Like I actually rejected putting out an update on one the other day because I didn't feel that it was necessary. And I felt like the selling club would sort of put the shields up and sort of make it more difficult for the player. You know, it was very easy there for me to, I could have just said, yeah, go on, put it out, because it's good for me. I get loads of retweets, loads of likes, loads of new followers and happy days. But ultimately, that wouldn't have been the best move for the player, because it would have created a circus that didn't need to be there, you know, when the player should be focusing on his own development. So
that's another good point, and perhaps even leads to another question. But like, you know, you as a journalist, anytime you tweet an update or you tweet a bit of transfer gossip, I know that when I've like broken things with Dominic on the English, like I'm thinking, how will the player feel about this? How will the buying club feel about this? And how will the selling club feel about this? Because sometimes you've got information that maybe one of those three parties don't want you to publish. And obviously I'm never publish something for the sake of publishing it. That's pointless and not the kind of journalism I'm interested in. But it is, you know, it's an interesting question. How do you judge that balance? How do you judge the relationship that you may have with the player, or even, you know, how is someone going to respond to me breaking this bit of news?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's not a one size fits all sort of thing. It's case by case. But one thing you do tend to get a feel of is the more you communicate with the agents and the people associated with the player and the people associated with the clubs, you very quickly get an idea of more of the selling club, where their mind's at, and, you know, what kind of deal they want and whether they want to sell at all and things like that. You learn these things very quickly, and it does become, it's hard to explain to, you know, when to somebody outside of the sort of the bubble or the industry, but the more you speak to these people, the more it becomes apparent in the way they speak to you. You know, an agent can be quite sort of defensive on what information he gives you, or he can sort of give you information but with a level of caution, saying this can't come out, this can come out, and I don't want to rock this boat. And very quickly you think to yourself, right, these are the boundaries that the agent is setting. So these are the boundaries I can't overstep. And sometimes, you know, the agents can get carried away with themselves as well, where they'll want to put something out to maybe sort of entice a few clubs to make a bid, and forgetting the fact that the selling club are really hard up on creating a circus. And sometimes it's up to you to maybe just ask a question and say, do you think this is the right move? I don't think a journalist is doing his job if he just goes, oh yeah, there's an update, that's great for my reputation, and presses go, because ultimately it won't be great for, well, it wouldn't be great for my reputation in the long run if I put a absolute piece of swear word here story out just because some guy wanted to add another $10 million onto a transfer. It's going to hurt me in the long run. So yeah, I think everyone very quickly comes to some kind of unspoken mutual understanding. You get a feel the more you speak to these people where their mind's at. So you just got to do it case by case.
No, a good answer and insightful answer as well. It's always interesting to hear how other people, you know, deal with similar situations. Like, you know, Dominic and I very recently, actually, like in the past 2 weeks, have like sort of had an exclusive like whipped from under our feet. We had, you know, an entire thread ready to go, and we were basically respecting the wishes of the buying club to allow them to make the announcement, because, you know, we were sat on the information and knew about it. And then another Venezuelan journalist, a very good one, very good investigative journalist, Mario Sanchez, you know, broke the story. And you're thinking, I've literally been sat on this information for a couple of weeks, and it happens. But anyway, thank you very much for joining us, Chris. And Dominic, thank you so much for expertly guiding us through the majority of this podcast with your MLS in Atlanta. And of course, Josef Martinez, knowledge and love. A pleasure to listen along and participate too. Thank you very much, and until next time, goodbye.